This is Unlocking Secrets for Women on CFUN, 1410 AM.
I'm Candace Newton, and this is Unlocking Secrets for Women here on 1410 CFUN. We're talking with Judy Tayabji-Wilson. When we left for the break, Judy and I were discussing diapers in the legislature. So welcome back, Judy.
Hi.
So, Judy, I want to talk about a sensitive subject, which is your very public divorce and child custody battle.
Right.
Frankly, I was very stunned that your personal information was splattered all over the newspaper for everyone to see.
Right.
I think it's a basic human fear as a woman, I think, that we all relate to, that level of vulnerability and exposure. But certainly none of us would ever believe that our personal letters would be on front page news.
Well, one of those things that becomes even weirder in retrospect. I mean, I guess at the time, it was, I don't know, in the context, it seemed terrible and horrible. But the fact that it's been, you know, it's been over 10 years, it's been almost 11 years. And there's never been anything even remotely like that happen to anyone else since. It's kind of
in Canada.
Yes. Yeah. You know, for example, when you're in the legislature, they say to you, there's a certain area that is sort of sacrosanct, okay? That they draw this bubble around the legislature, and your personal life is your own. This is what's told to you when you're elected MLA.
Yeah.
So you think, oh, well, that's interesting. And they say, you know, people can have relationships and it doesn't become a big story.
Of course, I'm sure.
Right. So when this happened, it violated that principle. And people, you know, there were people who were sort of political talking heads who said, well, that's odd, you know, it violated that principle. So I just assumed it was setting a precedent, and therefore, you know, anyone in the future who crossed that line would also be given the same treatment.
Mm-hmm.
But there have been many, many other personal relationships in the legislature where people are either having relationships outside their marriage or someone from the media is sleeping with someone who's an MLA or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And it does not become a story.
You're
thinking, well, it's been 11 years and nobody else has had this treatment.
Mm-hmm.
Why did they reserve it for us?
Yeah, that was, I don't know. I think you would imagine that it was it's just part of that sort of tag that seems to have attached itself to you, that you're going to be a first in just about everything.
I guess.
And,
I suppose that would have something to do with it.
But you should probably take comfort in the fact that you're in the same level of royalty.
So,
what's going on, what's happened in England.
I suppose I'd be comfortable if, you know, a castle came with it. You know, it's like, okay, you're going to kick the heck out of me. Could you please, like, reward me in some way?
Exactly.
You know, give me a parade when I come to town.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, I've, you know, as an educator and dealing with women for years and years, including myself, I've long learned that where there's people, there's problems. And as soon as something is out, there is no, if it's out of your mouth, it's gone. There
right.
is no place of protection. And I'm sure you have well learned that since.
Well, I mean, yes and no. They think there's still, I mean, I've learned that there are many people in the media, again, that will do things differently
mm-hmm.
when it comes to either myself or many times Gordon Wilson,
mm-hmm.
where we would have a different type of treatment.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very strange, and it could be, as you say, if you're setting new precedents, then there might be a sort of a group of people who always make it their cause to try to prove that you shouldn't really be doing what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And that was kind of how I felt, that there were a group of people out there who were on the record saying, I should never have been an MLA, and they were going to prove that they were right. They were going to prove that I didn't have what it took to be in the political arena. It's like a strange hazing ritual, you know.
And you wonder though, looking at basic human behavior and analyzing even amongst teenagers, when you have kids, for instance, which is, you know, that to me is sort of childish kind of behavior, when you have kids that are going to gang up on somebody else, there's some perceived threat there or some perceived level of vulnerability that they're not comfortable with, and they're going to shut it down.
Well, yeah, and that's kind of how it felt. It was like there's bullies in the schoolyard, and
mm-hmm.
there's a real ganging up. And I think what was, for me, most disappointing in that whole process was that the, you know, what we'd call the women's movement,
mm-hmm.
Some of the organizations that were mandated to protect women from the potential negative repercussions of taking on a man's environment, I mean, they absolutely wanted nothing to do with me.
Mm.
And part of it was because some of them were NDP people. And I
uh-huh.
thought, well, can't you put that aside? We're all women.
We're human. If it can happen to me, it can happen to you.
Yes, uh-huh. and many of the women who were involved in the feminist movement, they weren't mothers, and I got this feeling that they were sort of sneering at me for being too feminine.
Hmm.
You know, I hadn't given up my femininity to go into politics. I like being a woman, and I didn't want to have to turn into a man to be in politics. And I got this feeling some of them were like, you see, this is what happens when you don't, you know, play by the men's rules. I was like, well, if I'm playing by the men's rules, what am I bringing to the table?
Exactly.
You know, how are we changing anything? And so you'd have these front page stories from these women's groups saying, well, her case is different. Mm-hmm. You know, they might have taken her kids away, but, you know, it's different with her.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, what good are you to anyone? Meanwhile, the women would stop me everywhere I went, in shopping centers, in airports, everywhere, and say, you know, I'm hurting for you for what's happened, because all of us have lost. And I met women who left the province to file their custody cases, and women who were staying in bad marriages because they were afraid of, you know, losing their kids. And it really bothers me that my case was never challenged effectively. And I tried so much, but I was always on my own, and there were so many people constantly stacked up to point fingers at me. And, you know, it was just too much to try to overthrow that kind of inertia.
How did you, I mean, I'm thinking about myself. I mean, I consider myself a pretty strong person. I've been through a lot in my life. But, you know, as strong as you might be as a person, there's that whole human factor and the tenderness of a woman. How did you deal with those feelings? I mean, you felt obviously very alone.
Yeah.
How did you process that, Judy? Because I know there's women listening right now that may not have, you know, the background that you have or be exposed to that same environment, but the feelings of vulnerability are common amongst all of us, regardless of how we're exposed.
Right.
How did you handle those feelings? Like, what did you do to comfort yourself, to give yourself that, you know, sort of try to find that dignity back that you needed?
Well, I mean, there were many ways. Obviously, I had a new best friend. I mean, well, I shouldn't say new. Gordon and I had been friends for a number of years, but, I mean, we became very close in this process because it was very difficult for both of us.
Mm-hmm.
So that helped because he was so unconditionally supportive, and I hadn't had that. My previous relationship was very, very bad, and I had tried to leave that relationship many times before, contrary to what was publicized.
Yeah, that's it. People always think that it was just sudden. It never is. You cannot bust up something that's healthy and well.
The story, and you know, the thing is that at the time that the controversy was going on, no one asked me what was it like in your first marriage, because my ex-husband had already filled the airwaves with this image of this incredible relationship that had just mysteriously disintegrated. And I thought, you know, if you care about someone, you would never hurt them by doing that.
Well, like, you know what I found with men is a lot of times they really do believe it's wonderful. They're usually, not always with all men, because I don't want to be, I'm not a men basher, but but you know, sometimes guys really are thinking, hey, everything is peachy, and had no idea.
Well, at the time that he said that, we hadn't been living together for 3 months.
Hmm.
I mean, you have to have some idea. You know, by the same token,
perhaps he thought you were just temporarily away.
No, I mean, it was a bad relationship.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, now he will acknowledge, yeah, you know, it was bad. It was good that, you know, really we would have destroyed each other or whatever. But at the time, everybody thought I was this horrible person, and that was really tough. But there were also women. I remember one woman who had lost custody of one of her children. She had four children, and for whatever reason, they took one away. And she said to me, she said, what you will be most afraid of is that the bond between you and your children is going to somehow be damaged by this. That don't, it won't be. And if anyone listening is worried about that, there is nothing on the planet that can happen that affects the bond that you have with your children. And it was a great lesson for me to learn in some ways, but I grieved. I mean, I actually grieved every single day I was sad for about 4 years.
Oh, I believe it.
And I remember where I was standing when the grieving passed. I mean, I was looking out the window, and I had been sad every day for like an aching pain. I mean, it was the point I used to, every now and then I'd have to excuse myself. I'd go into the bathroom and I'd just cry my eyes out, and I'd clean myself up and I'd leave, and I wouldn't tell it. I mean, Gordon would know. He'd say, you know, I know what you're doing, and I'd cry in my sleep, and I'd wake up and my pillow would be all wet, and I'd think, okay, you got to get over this. But it took about 4 years of constant grieving, and then it passed. And it didn't, you know, it didn't change anything in my relationship with my kids. But I think as a mother, when your kids aren't with you like that, when it's that traumatic and it's that traumatic, you are always worried that they've actually died. Like, there's a part of you that thinks, and so every time you see them again, it's like, oh, thank God, they're not dead.
Yeah, it's
and
a terrible, It's a terrible, terrible loss. Judy, we want to talk about that more. And I want to continue this because I think that's really relevant. So coming up after the break, we're going to continue our really vulnerable, open woman-to-woman conversation with Judy Tayabji-Wilson. That's Unlocking Secrets for Women here on CFUN, 1410 AM.
You're listening to Unlocking Secrets for Women on CFUN, 1410 AM.